Hey, podcast listeners, I've been doing this project for about 2 years now, and it feels like it might be time to bring the podcasting part of it to a close. The time that it takes to record and edit and upload comes out of my practice time, and that's feeling more and more precious. If you would miss this podcast, and if you'd like it to continue, please write a review for me in iTunes, not just stars, but an actual review. If I have 100 reviews in iTunes by the end of 2012, I'll continue this podcast in 2013. But if not, I'll end it then and use the time to practice. Thanks a lot. You're listening to Play It Again, Swig. I'm Jocelyn Swigger, and I'm trying to learn all the Chopin etudes. I'm also trying to balance hanging out with my toddler, teaching full-time, and life's other distractions. This is my audio diary of that process. Well, it's Saturday, October 13th, and I have to tell you that I have barely been practicing Chopin etudes at all this week. I've kind of been on triage mode with this Brahms G minor piano quartet, and that's half the recital, and then violin duo pieces is the other half that's coming up. And you know, triage, you probably know what this means, but just in case you don't. So triage is how they decide in the emergency room which cases they're going to take first. So like when I went in with my broken finger a couple of weeks ago, and I was, you know, I had my finger in my bag of ice, and I was perfectly happy sitting there reading my novel and friendly and courteous and calm when I checked in. And then there was a teenage kid who I guess had done something to his arm, but he was holding his arm and sobbing in pain. They took him first, and they should take him first because, you know, he was sobbing in pain and I was fine for the next few minutes. Anyway, so you sort of take the most drastic person first, not just whoever shows up next first. And so this is where it's the most drastic thing. And this concert is coming up really soon, so I've been practicing Brahms a lot. So I'm just going to play you a little tiny bit of this and show you some of the ways that I've been practicing it. I've been doing a lot of this sort of typical stuff, like play it slowly, play it fast sometimes, play it in groups, play it with a metronome a lot. I've been playing it along some of the time with a recording I really like where Martha Argerich is the pianist, and I think Gideon Kramer is the violinist. I don't know who else is on it. They take some really, really fast tempos, and I'm not quite ready to go so lickety-split, so I'm not, and I don't think I could talk the rest of my group into doing that anyway. It's been kind of interesting to think about how Brahms is sort of different from Chopin, even though Brahms lived a lot longer, but they're both 19th century, they're both romantic, you know, they're not so far apart from each other, but Chopin is such a pianist. And even though, as you know, because I complained about it all the time, even though the etudes are very, very difficult, there's a feeling that they're difficult because I don't understand how to play the piano as well as Chopin wants me to. And once I really understand how to play the piano as well as Chopin wants, then it feels like they won't be so difficult. And I certainly have already experienced that with a lot of them getting much, much easier. And with Brahms, I find this to be true with Schumann too. Both of them have what I call Clara moments. Both of them loved Clara Schumann, who was Schumann's wife, very much. There's gossip about whether Brahms and Clara had an affair or not. It's, you know, nice and juicy and salacious to think that they did, but there's no actual evidence that they did. Anyway, I'll let other people argue about that. But whether they had an affair or not, they were certainly very, very close friends. I would say one piece of evidence towards maybe them not having an affair is that after Schumann died, Clara and Brahms stayed friends and didn't, you know, become partners. Anyway, that is completely neither here nor there. But the point is that Clara was the best pianist in Europe except for Liszt, or at least the most famous. She probably wasn't better than Chopin, but she was the most famous concert pianist except for Liszt. And there's a really, really a feeling that when you play music by Schumann and Brahms, because they were both writing piano music for her to play rather than for them to perform themselves. Brahms played his own music sometimes, but a lot of times you really feel like he's playing it for Clara. He would send it to her and say, I think of you playing my music, this kind of thing. Anyway, there's a feeling that when they come to something that's kind of awkward or doesn't lie under the hand very well or that's just kind of hard, instead of trying to work it out to make it fit the hand better, they just kind of say, oh, Clara can do it. It'll be fine. And it's like they just think Clara can do it. So since I am not as good a pianist as Clara Schumann, and also don't have hands as big as Clara Schumann, I played her sonata and was very surprised to see that she wrote tenths like this with one hand, which means she could reach them, right? Because you don't write music you can't play if you're a pianist composer. So she could do this. Not that she ever would, of course, because she would never write parallel fifths. That's forbidden according to the rules of counterpoint that we won't get into. Anyway, so Clara had big hands and she could do a lot. And there's really feeling, certainly in playing this piece, that Brahms comes to a lot of awkward moments and just goes, eh, Clara can do it. It'll be fine. So there are a lot of places where I'm having to make some choices about whether I'm going to do the brave thing, which is to kind of try and play the full, all of the notes that Brahms wanted, or whether I'm going to cheat and make it sound like the gesture, but maybe not play all the notes. And I'm making different choices there according to sort of what's going on. Let me show you this. This is towards the beginning. I'll play you the very beginning because it starts out as a piano solo and it's really simple and beautiful and kind of great. So this is the G minor piano quartet. And then the cello comes in. And then the viola comes in here. And then the violin comes in here. And then, oh my goodness, I'll stop singing there. Anyway, it goes on from there. So there's this moment on the second page that does this. I won't sing you the other parts. Here. Now here, I'm just going to show you the right hand. Let me just play it. Okay, so there I played what he wrote, and you can hear that that's nice and full. He says forte, which means loud. He wants it. It's the loudest part of the piece yet. No, it's not. I'm lying. It's slightly softer than it's been a minute ago. But still, I feel like this is a really important point right here. And we're going there. What's tricky about it is that this, he wants these, so I'm playing three notes here, and then he wants this turn on the top note, and then to go to here, these three notes, and then these four notes, and these four notes. That's pretty tricky for me with my hand size. I'm trying to do it. I'm going to throw some numbers at you. Ignore them if they mean nothing. I'm trying to, the normal thing, of course, would be to do five, if there weren't a turn, or maybe even 5-5-5-4-5-5-4 or 5-5, something like that. But it doesn't work with the turn. So what I'm trying to do is 5-5 means pinky, by the way. 5-5-5-3 with 2 in the middle. 5-3-2-3-5-2, which kind of works, but it, in the heat of the moment, it's a little scary. Let me try that again. Okay, that worked. I don't trust that yet. So that's what he wrote, and that's kind of the brave choice that I'm hoping I'm going to make. I think I actually am going to make that in this spot. But here's cheating. Did you hear a difference? You may have heard that it was a little bit faster and more facile. So what I did was I played all the notes here and here, and then I left out this note and just played these, which means I can use my thumb for this G, which makes all of this business much easier, and then played all the notes. So basically the difference is between this, everything, or so, is there a difference? The first one feels weightier and more important to me. They may not sound different at all. I'll actually listen to the recording and see how different they sound sort of while I'm not playing them. So that's a spot where I'm not quite sure how I'm going to deal with that yet, although I think I'm probably going to go for the weightier version. There's another spot where I think I am going to do the cheating way because it just doesn't, I haven't made it feel even possible yet, especially at a tempo close to what I want. So the last movement is a presto. It's really fun. It's this thing. This is not a tempo, but it's just not a tempo. Here. Now what he wants is, I'm going to slow it down, way down. Octave. Hear all these notes? All these notes? All these notes? All these notes? So let me play that for you slowly. Ah. So I can kind of do it at that like incredibly slow, boring tempo, but if I'm going to do it really, really presto, like it says, ah, that feels much better. What I just did is I left out the thumb notes, just like I did before. I won't walk you through all of that this way because it's kind of tedious, but it's the same thing where I'm leaving out the low note. So right now what I'm doing, and you know, I don't feel totally great about myself for it, but I think it's for now what's going to work is to play. Ugh. Sorry. I haven't really worked this out. Okay, that was terrible. Huh. Maybe he's not being so clear about this at all. After all, actually, maybe we should give Brahms some credit here. Maybe if you play all the notes, it actually keeps you from rushing. That's interesting. Ah! I swear I can't do that one. No, maybe I can. All right, I think I just changed my mind. I think I'm going to try and play that as written instead of cheating. Interesting. Interesting. Okay, well, so that's a discovery for the day. That's good. So one of the nice things Brahms does, I mean, I love Brahms. God, his music is gorgeous. He does a lot of really cool two against three things where one hand is playing three, the other is two. Like, here's an example. This sort of thing is, this is very, very typical Brahms writing. What came in? Yeah. Okay. That sort of thing. If you know the piece, you know that I just played a totally wrong note. It was supposed to be this. Nope, this. There we are. Anyway, maybe you can hear this. Here's another typical Brahms place. You can hear that it's the rhythm is sort of off, and it's kind of cool the way he does that. So there's a lot of that. That's nice. That's not particularly hard, that sort of thing. I would say what's harder is he does a lot of very cool counterpoint. I mean, boy, Brahms can write some counterpoint. I was going to show you one spot. Yeah, this is out of the first movement. Remember the beginning theme of the first movement was this thing? Right, so we have this theme. Okay, so he's going to take that and he's going to do... I'm playing this under tempo so you can hear it and so I can play it. Now here, this is the spot where I'm having to really break it down a lot. What he wrote was, this is going to be a mess, but I'll just play the mess. Oh my gosh. No. Yes. No. There we go. And then it becomes easier. Oops, no. Ah. And then it's much easier. This is also very typical Brahms moment. Okay. So it's actually kind of nice because you have this thing that's very difficult and then it relaxes into this thing that's pretty easy. So this business here... So you can hear what's happening motivically, right? We have our original from the very beginning, which is turned into in the right hand, and the left hand is staggered. So the right hand is going, hear that? And da-dee-da-dum and dee-da-da-dum, but they're not at the same time, which is what's hard about it. So one thing I've been doing is instead of playing with all of these broken octaves, I've been playing it just simplified as straight ahead octaves. So instead of this, I've been playing. Nah. There we go. Uh-huh. Like that. So that I can teach my hands where to go. And theoretically, if I can get really good at that, which I think I can if I actually practice it enough, then adding these guys in won't be such a big deal. But when I practice them right now, it just makes everything feel sort of even more discombobulated than it is. So that's a simplification I've been doing there. Something else that I'm trying to do there, and there's a lot of places kind of like that, but I just thought this would be a nice place to show you, is I'm trying to sort of group each... Basically, I'm trying to play in groups of two full beats. So we have this. That's one group. Or I'm making that into a group. And then this as a group, just so that I can feel that this, you know, geographically, I go from here to here, right? Choreographing from here to here. And then the next place I go is from here to here. And so I'm trying to think of these two as a pair, and these two as a pair, and these 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 as a pair. And these as a pair. And oops, I didn't go to the right one. And here. And then it gets easier. So now there's another tricky element that I have not dealt with yet, but I am going to need to deal with this. This is very, very similar to things that he does in the duo sonatas all over the place. But so he has, as you would expect, remember the theme is this. And he had that as a four-note phrase with a little slur line over it, right? So those four notes really are grouped together. And he has the same thing here. So he has these are grouped together, and then there's a break. And then these are grouped together, and then there's a break. Not a rest or anything, but just the curved line stops, and then a new one begins. And then these are grouped together, and these are grouped together, and these, you get the idea, okay? Left hand, same thing. These are grouped together. These are grouped together. These are grouped together. These are grouped together, right? Okay, but where that gets tricky is, remember, they're staggered. So I have this is a group with a break to here. But meanwhile, oops, I have to play left hand too. That's the point. So I have to try to make a break here and connect that. Now, normally, if I'm playing octaves, right, if I really want to make them sound legato, I mean, I can sort of try and pretend, and I can make them then work together. I can make them really feel like they're a unit, which I think that sort of does. But they're not truly legato, right, because I have to lift up my hand from one note to get it to the next one. So, of course, I would normally use a pedal, right? And then we feel like they're connected, where I'm pedaling on each one to work. Oops, that was a mess, but you get the idea. But of course, the trick is I can't do that because that would connect up the right hand where it doesn't want to be connected. So I'm going to play it now so that I connect the left hand with the pedal. You're going to hear, maybe you won't, but maybe you will hear that the right hand then doesn't work. Hear how it then the right hand, the phrase doesn't work? So I think I'm going to have to do this mostly without pedal. And I might have to add in a couple of little almost rests, like maybe make this note really, really short. I haven't worked it out yet. Nope, that wasn't good. I have to work it out. I won't make you listen to me practice that. But that's going to be kind of an interesting conundrum. And I should probably go back and look at my duo sonatas because I know there was a place, I think it's in one of the clarinet sonatas, that I really, really worked on that. And I might have some helpful notes about what I did there. Anyway, I'll let you know if I come up with something interesting about that. So those are the main places that I wanted to show you. It's a gorgeous piece. I mean, it's absolutely a pleasure to work on it. And it's so fun to play a piano quartet. Oh my God. There are moments where somehow, by some alchemy I don't fully understand, the piano plus the other three instruments, it's the violin, viola, and cello, it sounds like a full orchestra. It's just beautiful. It's really, really, really cool. Anyway, so I have been ignoring poor Chopin all week. Other people, I'm sure, are practicing him lots, including some of my students, so I don't feel too bad on his behalf. I'm going to continue pretty much ignoring him. I also have a Mozart violin sonata that's pretty awkward and a cool Piazzolla tango that I'm working on that's here. Oh, you know what? I'll play you a little bit of this. This is kind of fun. This is called Nightclub 1960. Let's see if I can do this. I haven't practiced this yet today. It's really awkward. Okay, it's supposed to be really fast. Let me play this a little slower. Oh, what a mess. I'm going to just play this part a little bit. So you can see this is fun. Meanwhile, there's a violinist playing a nice melody over this. Oh my God. Anyway, so that's kind of fun. It's sort of like a little sort of poppy. So that's really fun, but awkward. And, you know, it's not Clara moments, like Piazzolla is playing his own music, but it just doesn't, nobody feels as good as Chopin. Like when Chopin feels good, it feels so good. And this does not feel as good as that, but that's okay. So that will be a fun thing to play. There's also a couple of really nice lullabies by Amy Beach and Sam Adler. And then this Mozart violin sonata that I have not completely worked out. It's got these sort of funny, here, I'll play a little bit of this too. Why not? So this is the beginning. This is an adagio and it starts with piano all by itself. Strange. I need to read his letters. It's in Vienna in April 1781, so I need to figure out what he's doing right now. Not that he necessarily, like, his life doesn't at all connect with what he's writing, but maybe he was, I don't know, it almost feels really Baroque. It's like he was trying to write Baroque organ music or something. I don't have a handle on it. I don't have an intuitive handle on it. I've listened to a couple of recordings, but I haven't really gotten into it. So, but anyway, then it gets into this fun thing. This is also piano solo. This is the beginning of the Allegro. So there's this big giant adagio introduction that kind of goes on and repeats a lot. Well, it repeats once, but it feels like a lot. And then there's this Allegro here. And then the violin comes. And then it goes on. I jumped the gun. Anyway, so that part's really fun. It's just the introduction that I don't quite have a handle on. And then the second movement is a theme and variations, and I haven't completely warmed up to it, I have to confess. Anyway, I am enjoying practicing it though, because it's fun to play Mozart, and it's very different from everything else I've been playing. So that's some of the stuff that I've been doing while I have not been practicing Chopin. I'm pleased to report that my finger is much better. That's really nice. I'm not wearing a splint or anything anymore. It still is a little sore now and then, but it doesn't hurt when I play, so that's good. And I think that is about all I have for this week. So that's it. You can find out more about this project at playedagainstwick.com. You could follow me on Twitter at Jocelyn Zwicker, or like my Facebook page, or write me a review on iTunes. It would be awfully nice. And thank you so much for being my practice buddy.